Hello and welcome to episode 47 of the Freo Big Footy Podcast. This week we'll have a quick look at the semi-final loss Fremantle had on the weekend, going down 15 goals 15-105 to 11 goals 17-83. Then we'll have a bit of a quick look at the season review and maybe a quick look at the list management and rumours going around, as well as the three players picked by the All-Australian selectors and obviously two of them first-time recipients. Joining us this week is our usual Victorian expert, Seppo. How are you, mate?
I'm good. How are you, Centurions?
Very good, thanks, mate. Obviously a bit of a game of two halves on the weekend with Fremantle sort of dominating play in the first two quarters but unable to convert it on the scoreboard. And as they say, Seppo, bad kicking is bad football, and Fremantle unfortunately were made to pay by the Power, who came over the top of them in the last quarter.
Yeah, it seems like we've learnt nothing from the grand final loss last year with bad kicking costing us again. It was just a funny feeling knowing that we were up by that much at half time and knowing that it wasn't a really good, confident first half that we played that was wasted opportunities. I was actually at the pub and just, you know, turning to my mate next door and saying, you know, these misses could actually hurt us even though we're that far in front. So it was amazing how far we actually got without, when you look at it in hindsight, missing McFarlane, Johnson, Silvani and Ballantyne. You take those type of key players out of most other sides at the pointy end of the season, and not too many sides are going to do well. So I think we've done well to get where we are. It's just a bit disappointing we couldn't capitalise on that, at least the margin, the buffer and the old 30-point rule that you see get bandied around on Twitter itself. We've broken it in this loss.
Yeah, it was quite funny that obviously there was a bit of banter going around that Fremantle managed to kick 12 goals before the start of the game. They had a sort of 30-0 record, and likewise if Ballantyne played and if Stephen Hill got over 25 possessions, and ironically he's just kicked 11 goals. And then Hill actually played quite well, and, you know, with 28 touches, but we just weren't able to, as you said. And like, and there was, I mean, some of them were tougher kicks, but we missed. Like, Subin missed one from 40 out directly in front. Hill missed one on the run, which he'd normally get. And we just, as you said, just missed too many opportunities. And unfortunately, when you play any sort of team in the top five, you just can't let them have that opportunity to get back in the game.
Mm.
And I thought even Fremantle were going to hang on for a bit, even when that last quarter they seemed to have another surge and they got to that 10-point lead. But unfortunately, they just were unable to hang on. But I suppose the ironic thing, Seppo, was that probably if we look at the team players who played well, it was probably our younger brigade who stood up in guys like Lachie Neal, who had another 30-plus touches. Port Sutcliffe was again very good. And unfortunately, some of our more experienced players had a few brain fades, and particularly in that third quarter with Daniel Pearce kicking across the back line, and then Fife also doing exactly the same thing, unfortunately. And those two goals sort of tended to swing the momentum about.
It's a sort of a change from our defensive side that we have been noticeably more attacking, going through the midfield and taking risks, but it's guys like Daniel Pearce and that back line that you don't want kicking across to, I think it was Barlow, that just had that misdirected kick that they turned over and got that goal that sent Port on their run. But it's funny looking at the, you know, future is bright with the young guys like Neil and Sutcliffe and Crozier sort of had a good game, got on the scoreboard twice. Those guys had good games, but it's just looking over the stats now that there's a couple of guys like Zach Clark didn't lay a single tackle, yet Ant Sandilands got in there and it earned three tackles himself. So there's guys that really didn't step up, and, you know, Sandilands got 50 hit outs and absolutely dominated Lobe in the centre bounces and around the ground, and Lobe still managed to get, looking at the stat sheet now, about 27 hit outs himself. So Clark really struggled only with four. So, and I think a lot of Port's dominance came out of the middle, even though we were dominating early when Clark went in there. So we really struggled to get the ball out, and we were capitalising on Aaron in the middle, and that was those good patches where Fife and Hill were getting a lot of the ball and surging forward. But we just, really struggled when some of those guys just really didn't get themselves involved in a finals-like game for me.
I think the other thing that, and we sort of talked about it in the pod throughout the year a little bit, Seppo, but the fact is that we don't have a quality small defender. I know that there's a lot of talk about our lack of key forwards after Pavlich, and I mean, obviously Tabernet hasn't certainly set the world on fire in the final series, but it does show promise. But unfortunately, we just struggle against those small forwards. And if you look at the game on the weekend, if you go through it, they kicked 12 or 13 goals just from their small forwards. I mean, I thought Dawson did a pretty good job overall in the night trying to keep that defence under, you know, under control, and he certainly kept Schultz quiet.
The fact that Schultz kicked one goal one and Westhoff kicked 0 goals one, it means that, you know, without Silvani out there, it was pretty much all up to, I think Ibbotson spent most of the night in Westhoff and running up and down the field and peeling off, but it was Dawson that you could really give some votes to for the way he kept the taller guys out. And yeah, it's just a real shame that obviously with Silvani out, it probably played around with the structures a bit, and we couldn't afford to keep Mzungu and Ibbotson on those smaller tops who have had in the past. But we are really missing one of those guys to, ever since Roger Hayden's left, we've never really had a very, you know, almost considered A grade smaller defender.
Well, exactly right. And I know they tried a couple of years ago to get one with sort of, and I think they were sort of maybe earmarking Sloyth for that a little bit last year, and he sort of got dropped off the list and had a good year in the waffle. And then they had Jordan Wilson King was another one they tried. And obviously they sort of got, you know, in the end they had to bring Sutcliffe down there, and I think Sutcliffe, I think he's more of a traditional winger. And I mean, I know a lot of the time, Seppo, when watching Sutcliffe plays for Fremantle in the waffle prior to him sort of coming up to our side, he was a really good wingman and just ability to run all day, but just a lack of small defenders has really sort of come back to bite us on the list management side. And I think that's certainly one area that Fremantle will need to work on in the off-season, along with probably, you know, there's a few other things we'll touch on later, but that certainly hurt us against Port Adelaide, that's for sure.
And I suppose there's a point with our kicking our winning scores that that stat they had before the game without Ballantyne out there, it was very hard. So Walters had a quietish game, but still kicking 3 goals 3. He could have maybe converted one or two of those more, but you know, without Ballantyne out there, he just becomes, he gets a bit more pressure from the other guys. So it would have been nice to see both those guys out there in a final. It's a real shame, but at least he held his head high and did his part for the team, Walters. But it would have been nice for us to have two guys out there like Port had, you know, Gray and Wingard and Wines doing their job. That would have been nice for us to have that extra small out there.
Well, I thought Crozier wasn't too bad. He kicked, I mean, he didn't get a lot of opportunities, but he kicked a couple of goals, and I certainly don't think you could fault him for what he did. He worked up the ground reasonably well, but as you said, Ballantyne is a bit of a barometer for us and just gets the crowd going and the other players as well. But I think the other thing that's going to be probably more interesting, I think, Seppo, for the off-season as well is the Fremantle midfield and the sort of blending or the mix of the midfielders that they have in there. I mean, it's always easy in hindsight and all that sort of stuff, but it just seemed like, and I know Hawthorn sort of have the same sort of issues to a degree, that if one or two, like particularly if Hill or Smith get shut down, they lack that extra runner. And I think we sort of like, and the same sort of thing happened with us a little bit with Pierce and Hill, and I think we probably, and that's where we need that player like Sheridan to be able to step up in the off-season and really try and cement a spot. I think we just lack that one extra runner to rotate through the middle. And I don't know whether we, as you said, whether someone like, if Walters has a full off season and is able to rotate up, or Crozier can show a little bit in there, but we just seem to lack that one little bit of extra running ability. I mean, it certainly probably gets exaggerated against Port as well, but we just, I just think we just need to change that mix up a little bit in there, and be interesting to see what Ross Lyon does in the off season in that regard.
It will certainly be the nice compliment if we actually get Sheridan in there. It's almost like that class of 2011 would be complete if he can get in there and play amongst the likes of Neil and Crozier and Sutcliffe. And if you add Sheridan to that list, it's going to be fantastic to see those guys all run around together. And it's a real shame he had that injury, because it looked like he was just starting to get a bit of form back for Peel towards the end. And that, I think the hip injury or hamstring that just ruled him out towards the end of the year was a real shame, because hopefully he can hit the pre-season well, and it will certainly add to, like you say, what we're missing with another. Sometimes people mistake him for Hill, the way that Sheridan moves out there. So, and he does have a good kick on him. So he's a great person to give us inside 50s and with a bit of that breakaway speed. So,
yeah.
Forward to it.
And it'll be sort of, I mean, obviously there's been quite a bit of talk on the board this week, and I know you mentioned it a bit earlier as well, Seppo, about Zach Clark. Obviously, probably hasn't, you know, I think from the start of the year, when he obviously missed the whole pre-season with after the music festival debacle, he sort of hasn't really probably shown the sort of progress he played the year before when he was playing primarily in the first ruck. I think most people agree he is a better ruckman than forward, but I think it'll certainly be a big year for him next year in terms of trying to cement his spot on the side, I think.
Yeah, certainly. He's got a lot of work to do and become more physical. That's, to me, that if there's one thing for him to improve on this season, it's just becoming a bit more physical and dominant, because it seems like he's, even just watching replays of when you sort of take note of what he does after the actual the ruck, he doesn't seem to impose himself on the game too much. So that's sort of what I want a bit more from him, to become, you know, taking over the reins if he wants to be a first ruckman behind Sandilands.
Yeah, absolutely. So certainly a bit of thinking for required in the off-season, but it'll, as you said, I mean, you couldn't fault the pressure or the effort in the first half. Unfortunately, it just looked like that the boys had run out a bit of a puff, and I think that probably in a nutshell encapsulated the season, Seppo, in some ways. We saw some brilliant footy and we saw some poor footy, and we never seemed to really get out of the gates apart from maybe the first game of the season against Collingwood.
Yeah, it does seem like when you look back over the whole year, other than our probably wins over probably Geelong at home in Pav's big game, or the Hawthorn win at home just a couple of weeks ago, it didn't ever seem like we really, really had some, you know, four-quarter performances that you just look back and admire, except for that round one game against Collingwood here. So it's a real shame that we haven't really pieced together a great run. Almost like we had a slight step backwards from 2013, where we, you know, made the grand final. So it's a bit annoying, but at least we haven't lost too much, because there's definitely been improvement with our younger brigade, which is perfect. And some of the older guys have just had that little bit of a step back or just stagnate in their development. So hopefully some of those guys can get back to it. And it's just, it's all in hindsight now, but it may be amazing to see what difference a Johnson or Silvani or Ballantyne would have done for that final against Port.
Yeah, it's sort of before we move on to just having a look at that side of it, is there any other points you want to bring up, Seppo, about the final? Or
no, I think that's all done and dusted. I think Port deserve the credit for the way they played and came back into it, because I think if we'd put a bit more pressure on after half time and really put it beyond, you know, instead of a 36-point margin, if it got out to 50 or something, it could have been done and dusted. So it's just a real credit to Port, the way they fought back and sort of just ran it out. So good luck to them.
Yeah, absolutely. I think they'll be up against it a bit this week. And, I mean, I still think Sydney are the team to beat out of all of them, but the other interesting thing, Seppo, you just talked about was last year when it was quite interesting. There's all the talk about Hawthorn being battered and injured all year. And, I mean, they have had a pretty horrid run early in the season, but when the business end of the game came around, they've had all their best players out on the field. And if we look back at what happened to us last year, a lot of our, like Sandilands and Pav and those sort of blokes probably struggled in the first half of the year or didn't even get out on the park, but all came together towards the end. And I think it's just the importance of having all those blokes in the side at the last, you know, in the last sort of two or three rounds. And I think there was some talk this week. I think in the last five games of the season, we either lost someone or there was an injury, or, you know, we had Barlow 1 week, Ballantyne another week, Fife with a suspension, Johnson with an injury. We just never managed just to keep that side settled. And unfortunately, and Port Adelaide were going in with a full strength outfit, and you know, it doesn't matter who you are. If you've got your best 22 out there and playing well, they're always going to be tough to beat, especially if
I think that's a sign of where Port and North have actually got to now, because their injury list must be quite minimal and they've got their best 22 out there and performing quite well. And for us, you're thinking back to last year, like you said, all I can remember is guys like Clancy Pearce and Ibbotson out of our, I think, the grand final side, or at least the semi-final. So it's a stark contrast to the, you know, the personnel or the best 22 we're missing this year. So it's puts into perspective.
I think really, realistically, you've only really got Rioli out for Hawthorn, who would probably be in their best 22. I could be wrong, but I can't think of anyone else off the top of my head. And probably with Sydney, maybe Alex Johnson, though. I mean, even he would have a hard job getting a gig again ahead of someone like Rampy or Nick Smith, the way they've played this year. So, I mean, they're Port are full strength. So, as I said, if you have your best side out there, you're going to be certainly a big chance to win games, especially. And I mean, you can cover it against probably teams in the bottom eight, but it's very tough to do it against teams in the top four and do it on a weekly basis without having your best side out there.
That's it.
So obviously the changes, Seppo, will be starting to filter through reasonably soon, you would think. Obviously Fremantle have had two sort of definite delistings with the retirements of Kepler Bradley and Scott Gumbleton. But after that, it's sort of there's been no real word out of the club. There's been obviously talk about James Fowler being offered a 5-year deal worth $600,000, but although that does come from Kim Hagdahl, who probably you wouldn't necessarily always believe, if the facts are pretty well established that Geelong have offered 5 years for $500,000, there's no way Fremantle would have to obviously offer more than Geelong to be any sort of chance of getting him. So that does have some sort of credibility, you'd have to think. And obviously there's some talk about Jared Wade as well.
Mm. Well, what's your opinion on Tua? If you sort of, if you gave a simple yes or no to guys like Frawley and Waite and the other guys being bandied around, would you be keen for one or both of those two? I'm certainly in favour of Frawley if the price is right. I certainly wouldn't want to see a big exorbitant 7-year deal at, you know, something closer to $3-3.5 million for that type of length. Certainly, I think we've got some good depth coming through, but I wouldn't want to see us, and I don't think it's, you know, thing of the past now, us overpaying and giving away top draft picks. So, yeah, certainly a tick for Frawley for me if it does eventuate at the right price, but I'm not too sure about Waite. How about you?
I mean, Waite's a tough one because Waite's best is awesome. Like, Waite's best is probably going to be more than good enough to play in our side every single week. The problem with Waite is you don't know whether it's going to be which Waite you're going to get from week to week. And most of the time his defensive effort and not so much his body language, but his second efforts and defensive tackling pressure and stuff like that is pretty non-existent. And it would be very tough for him, I think, to fit into the Ross Lyon sort of edict, especially at his age, to do that. Now, I do think that Fremantle probably could afford to roll the dice a little. And it's, I think the interesting thing is, if you look at the Hawthorn model, Seppo, they are not afraid to trade a first-round pick for a quality player.
Yeah.
They've done it in the past with Gunston. They did it with McAvoy. They did it with Brian Lake. And, you know, people say, oh, you know, but I think if you get the right player, I don't think, you know, as a free, I mean, you're not losing anything in free agency, but at the same time, you're probably, I don't know, it'd be interesting to see what you could get for your first rounder as well, I think, rather than just sort of putting all the eggs in those two. Mm. I mean, I, to be fair, haven't seen a lot of Melbourne this year. I mean, the bits that I have seen, he's certainly shown he's capable, but I just, you know, you'd probably have to play him in defence more than as a forward, and I think that's, you know, I mean, it's just whether you think Tanner Smith and those sort of guys are going to stand up, because we definitely need another player who can play in that key to, in case we get an injury, because unfortunately Silvani, while he is good, he unfortunately hasn't been able to stay out in the park for a number of weeks in a row. But whether you pay $600,000 a year for that insurance is a lot of cash out of your salary cap.
Certainly is.
And, you know, I mean, obviously there's Duffy re-signed during the week for a one-year extension by all accounts, and I suppose the other major one at the moment is De Boer. I mean, he's obviously been offered a one-year contract on a bit of a reduced pay, and it's whether he stays for another year or whether he goes somewhere else. And I think he would have some sort of currency in the, with, especially if you looked at a GWS or someone like that, where you just want someone in there in that thing. But I don't know whether what quality. I mean, you'd probably have to tee up with a first round pick to get some sort of quality. But I don't know if they've actually got anyone that we could use, unless it was one of those big forwards that they don't. You know, between Boyd, but unfortunately now with Patton going down, they'll be wanting to keep Boyd and Cameron.
Yeah, certainly. When I look at De Boer, if it was one player from a list that we did entertain the thought of trading away, I could see a lot of people have been talking about Carlton, and I can see him going to those younger sides or even struggling sides like, you know, Saints, Brisbane, Melbourne. De Boer would probably slot right in there, especially even just for his leadership qualities. The fact that he's, you know, recently been in our leadership group, I'm not sure if he would attract a third round or a second round upgrade for him. So it would be interesting, like when you think about a lower positioned club in the draft, they'd have that lower end of the, or sorry, don't really call it higher or lower end of the scale draft pick, but at least we might be able to get something decent for him if he is to go. And I think almost that we might need to make the move when you look at those two retirements of those Kepler and Gumbleton, and then you've got the McFarlane possible retirement. That could be three changes there. So it looks like, you know, we might make one more spot available on the list with De Boer going, and that just leaves Simpson with the option to either sign him on or delist and re-rookie. So you'd think if we want to do make a bit of a move or even pick up someone through free agency that we are going to have to make a clear spot on the list, and I can't see us trading away too many of our currently contracted players. So it leads me to believe that he may go, and where he goes and what for is probably the question mark.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing I suppose we've got to look at as well, in that regard is probably looking at our list. Obviously, there's a couple of players they need to make a decision on in terms of the rookies as well. Like, obviously, Sam Manigola is up for, he's got to go up either into the main list or be removed. So he could be one sort of player that, I mean, I think they're going to probably have to look at what they do with Crowley. I mean, Crowley's going to be the interesting one, I suppose. He's certainly still does his job each week, but you do lose a little bit with him in the centre of the square, certainly in the clearances, and whether he does enough, still gets enough of the ball. I mean, he's certainly been a great servant, and, it's going to be certainly a tough call at some point, but, if you get, Manigola, that's really what his role is, if he's going to do anything, and I'm just not convinced he's shown enough to go up onto the main list at this point. What do you think, Seppo?
Well, Manigola is one that looks like a great athlete and does all right at waffle level, but I don't think, we've never got to see that opportunity at AFL level, and a lot of people talking about training and how he's suited to a Crowley-type role, but I think Crowley end up next year on our list doing something almost like De Boer, being a solid player, but just not as good quality as what he's been in the past, and almost coming to, looking like playing about 15 or 17 games maybe, and we'll just slowly phase him out. But it's hard to sort of justify Manigola being either upgraded and take a spot on the main list, and obviously he can't re-rookie because it's his third year on that list. So it's makes it a bit hard, but you never know. There's players like Ballard and everything coming through that may get that role as well. So you never know what's down there in that rookie list or how ruthless they might be with a clean, it might not be that guys like Imola, Vandeleur, Wooden, Ballard are all safe. You think Ballard would stay based on his performance so far, but they might make the call and decide there's a bit more talent out there in the rookie land to add to that list.
Yeah, I think I agree with you in terms of the other. I mean, Moller is an interesting one, being the Category B rookie. Whether they, he's still probably, being that ruckman, I still think he's still got a number of years, I think, to develop, and it's whether Fremantle can continue to do that. And Ballard, I think, shown a bit this year down for Peel, but he certainly knows how to rack the ball up, but he's probably, he's not a poor man's Barlow, but he probably the best way to describe him. Unfortunately, yeah. I mean, and Barlow's not a great kick either, but he's certainly got Ballard covered. Ballard just needs to work on his disposal in the off-season. He does everything else well. He's a good size, but just his disposal at times really lets him down. He doesn't really need to work on his fitness. He just needs to sit there and keep the ball and just keep working on that, and particularly under pressure, where I think Wood and Vandeleur are probably still like project players, and they'll be probably we'll probably get maybe one more year before they make a call on those guys. I think they still get a couple of more because they've only got the veterans as well on the list. If McFarlane goes, I don't know if McFarlane is a veteran actually. But they may get one more, because they normally can have six rookie spots, so they may actually open up another rookie spot as well, depending on what happens there. The other thing, Seppo, I suppose what we can, we'll just have a quick look at through the, while the off-season is among us, we'll just go through maybe the first seven or eight players by number on the list and just give thoughts on each player for the year. But before we do that, it's probably remiss of us, Seppo, not to talk about the Australians during the week, and most people were pretty confident that Fife would be a lock, and certainly turned out to be the case, but probably less optimistic on, most people thought Sam Williams would be a good chance, particularly if they went with two ruckmen or one, but obviously there was a lot of talk about Sam Jacobs getting the nod, and he was certainly getting plenty of, media presence out there for him to be picked, and obviously Ballantyne they thought was probably the least likely of the three, but probably maybe a bit of a surprise that he got also the pick. Not saying it certainly wasn't well deserved, because I think his defensive pressure and everything else has been fantastic, so I think he certainly earned it, but most people probably thought that he wouldn't certainly being over in WA, probably get the kudos that he deserved for it.
Well, it's quite interesting. Obviously, a lot of people just had Fife penciled in, but like you said, with those other two, I did call it earlier on that all three would make the side, but when you're looking at Sandilands versus Jacobs, a lot of mixed opinion on the main board of Big Footy about who actually had the better year. And I suppose if you look at the stats, I think Jacobs had a better around the ground impact. But on purely on as a ruckman, Sandilands had some pretty dominant stats. And even when the two met, I think Sandilands absolutely dominated Jacobs. So you probably make an argument there. And I don't know if they went through the explanation on why they only selected the one ruckman in that All-Australian side. You almost feel, it's been a couple of years since they've named two out-and-out ruckmen, but I think it would have been fair to have Jacobs in there, or if they were to name emergencies for an All-Australian side, to at least throw him in there, because he did have a good year, and I think he should be recognised. But I think I think it was Kevin Bartlett that I was reading some notes from the actual All-Australian selectors, and they picked Ballantyne over Betts, even though that I think Betts kicked 50 or 51 goals and Ballantyne kicked 49 due to the fact that Ballantyne does provide a bit of that defensive pressure on the ground. So it's glad to see that that was recognised by the guys, and it's not just about how many goals you kick, it's the stuff you do without the ball too.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the other thing that probably helped Sandilands was the fact that he was in the top five or six in the league for the contested marks, which obviously would have helped. And I think it's also his ability to tap, particularly inside that forward 50, the number of goals that we got this year, with that just that little tap behind, whether to Lockie Neal or those sort of blokes, was... and when he did it and it came off, it just looked first class. And I just think that his tap work was probably a little bit better than Jacobs. Jacobs probably got a little bit more around the ground, but in the key areas of contested mark and creating score, I think Sandilands certainly deserved the nod. And I think it's probably kudos for over his entire career, not just one year as well. I mean, I think he's been... You know, certainly, I mean, most people would argue or probably say that Dean Cox has been the top ruckman in the AFL over the last decade, but I think he's certainly been up there in the top two or three, that's for sure, over the same period.
Yeah, certainly. If we have another year from Sandilands like he has this year, I think he'd probably even have a chance to surpass Cox. But at the moment, you'd probably give Cox the best ruckman over the past 10 years. So it wouldn't take too much, I reckon, for Sandilands to go past him, but it's great to see that his body's fit and he doesn't require any off-season surgery, and it's straight to the training track for Sandy. So hopefully Big Aaron can have another killer summer and come out and play close to 20 or 21 games next year for us, because it'll be fantastic if he can go around again and be dominant like he has been this year.
I think the other thing, Seppo, that probably will need to be really considered next year is the fact that because of the late start with the World Cup of Cricket, that there's only one bye next year in the season. And I think it'd be interesting. I know, and it's probably an admirable trait that Ross Lyon has, where he says, no excuses, we play our best 22. But I think a couple of times this year it may have come back to haunt us a little bit. You know, the decision to play McFarlane against St Kilda, that game where he probably could have had the week before the bye, where he could have had a really good chance to get his body right rather than sort of trying to push it back out. And I think they probably need to look at some of those players that we use and rest, like just have a little bit more rest. And if you've got a squad of 30, because realistically, I think most people would agree, Seppo, that we probably have 28, 29 players you'd feel comfortable playing in the first 22 on a regular basis. And I think we just maybe need to rotate some of those guys a little bit more, like probably a bit like Geelong does, and then have those guys come into the system and, we're not only blooding them a little bit, but... also just giving some of our older guys a bit more rest. I mean, Geelong do it and they don't even travel every second week, and I think it does have a bit of benefit towards the end of the season.
Well, it's amazing considering this year how many players played every single game and the amount of times, like Daniel Pearce has played pretty much every single game since he's come across to us, yet Ross always talks about the post-match presses and even on the radio on Monday night about Daniel Pearce being sick or carrying an injury, and it's funny that he doesn't get a rest. And there are some guys out there that look like they could do with, they don't have to be older guys, but guys that just sort of break up, get a mental refresher rather than the standard buys that they're given. And it's hopefully something they can do with those guys next year, considering the reals is only one buy.
I mean, when you look at it this year, Seppo, we had 17 guys play at least 20 games in the season. So, I mean, for the majority of the time, we had the same blokes out there. You know, there was a few guys that came in and out, but at least 17 of them played at least 20 games. And then I think we had probably six of them who played in every game, which was Daniel Pearce, Crowley, Mundy, Sutcliffe, Spur, and Duffield. So we had six guys play every game, and then we had 17 play at least 20. So, you know, we generally more often than not had a lot of those guys out there. And, I mean, only I think Sandilands missed one, Main missed one, Mzungu missed one, and Dawson missed a couple. I think that was may have even been through suspension.
Suspension,
or yeah. So it's certainly going to be interesting to see how they you know, start blending those guys in, particularly with only one bye next year. And our list is getting a little bit older, particularly towards that top end in some of our guys. But just having a look through the list, as I said, Sapo, we'll just go through each player and maybe over the next few weeks just have a look at rate their season. Obviously, Hayden Valentine, we've just talked about quite a bit, being the number one, obviously, on our team. And not much more needs to be said, really, with him. He's had a fantastic year. And
leading goal kicker.
Leading goal kicker, and he's certainly a barometer of our side. And, yeah, I mean, he certainly deserved his All-Australian side comp, and I think he's been a fantastic player for us.
Yeah, he certainly has.
Number two, Morabito. Obviously, great for him to get back out on the park more than anything and actually get through a whole season relatively unscathed. And obviously, there was a bit of talk about, obviously, potentially doing his knee in the training session just before that game against Port. But by all accounts as well, Seppo, I was told that he was being told that morning that he was actually going to be the sub for the game.
And, oh, wow.
And I think, you know, obviously, I mean, as I said, I'm not sure how accurate it was, but, you know, the guy's normally pretty accurate with that sort of stuff. And they said he was going to be the sub for the match and unfortunately got injured and then missed out. So I think that sort of probably exasperated that injury even further for him.
Yeah, it's a real shame. I was glad to only hear that was only a 2 to 4 week because that would have been a killer leading right into next season for him to get his body right. So at least now that he got his couple of games, and it's a shame the way he, not debuted, but returned all the way back up in Darwin, but that certainly will stick in the memory for me as one of the highlights of the season, his return. So it's great to see him back out there.
Yep, absolutely. Number three is obviously Zach Dawson, who's probably, still quite a maligned player, but not only within the club and some of the supporters, but also within the AFL. And I think when you look at the money sort of that's being bandied around, even for guys like James Frawley and that sort of thing, Seppo, I think the money that we're paying Dawson's a bargain, to be perfectly honest.
Especially for how well he's actually done his role this year. Like he probably hasn't got too much votes and recognition or on Big Footy board, but the stuff he's done this year I think has been fantastic and even quite durable. The fact that he's probably missed games through suspension only. And even the fact that he's got up and, you know, earned a Mark of the Year nomination and kicked one of those fantastic goals. I can't remember what game it was, but he certainly got up there and did a pretty good job all year.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you probably don't notice it as much when you, if you watch it on TV, Seppo, but obviously you know that you get to obviously watch him quite a few times a year. But just his ability to peel off his man at times and just help out and be the third man up and, you know, just knows exactly what happens and just his ability to dictate where people need to be and all that sort of stuff. And even on the weekend with only being one key defender really out there, I thought he saved a few goals on the weekend just with his efforts. And I think he's, I think he's good value for what we're paying him and the dearth of fullbacks in the league. I think he's certainly a pretty maligned guy for no reason.
Value for money.
Yeah. I mean, you're certainly not going to get him to, kick the ball too often and, you know, run you out of defence. But I know there's been a lot of talk in the, you know, obviously here about McKenzie and that sort of thing not making all Australian, Seppo, but I wouldn't have McKenzie or Glass, who's obviously been a quality fullback in, has been quality users of the ball either coming out of defence.
That's true.
All right, number four. Obviously, Colin Sylvia after a big off-season move and never really got it going and came over and reportedly not in the best shape. And unfortunately for him, that was probably a sign of the year to come for him. He did play six games for us and had a bit of a stretch, but just never was able to show the consistency or impact on scoreboard that probably Lyon and the match committee were looking at when they recruited him.
Yeah, it's a shame because he did look like he'd come from a bit of a fair way back to get there, but for I don't really remember all sort of six games when you think about it. I just remember a couple of highlights and performances or something that he actually looked like showing some signs of, you know, what we were looking for, but it's just a shame that he didn't really have a big impact, and hopefully he's looking forward to a full, you know, clean bill of health for this off-season, because that can make, I reckon, a big difference leading into next year.
Well, it's certainly going to be a big year for him, and I think if he doesn't show anything this year, he could certainly be one of those players that Fremantle will probably just look to maybe just pay out his contract and cut him off the list if he doesn't show anything next year. I think it'll be certainly a make-or-break year for Sylvia at the club, that's for sure. Number five, obviously, Garrick Ibbotson. Played a pretty reasonable last few games, I thought, particularly in the finals. He does frustrate you at times, I think, with his lackadaisical sort of style, but I thought he's used his body a little bit better this year, Seppo. He's shown a little bit more strength there, but still prone to those brain fades occasionally at times with his disposal. And, particularly in the first quarter, just looks like he's playing at waffle speed sometimes and just sort of gets himself caught into trouble for no reason.
I think he missed a lot of footy this year, but the thing that stood out for me is the way that he came back in that final against Sydney and played that loose man and, like you said, used his body a bit better, flew back, played that third man role quite well, and something that we've been wanting from him and Duffield for a long time. It looked like he'd finally got back to his best, but it just probably wasn't enough of a long stretch together. So he's another one you could say had been affected by injury and fitness this year. So if Ibbotson gets back to it, and it's a shame his shoulder popped out during this game, but I thought it might have been another reoccurring one, and hopefully he doesn't need off-season surgery on that shoulder, because it'd be great if he can get back to it and help us, especially if Johnson's showing signs of reoccurring injuries.
Yeah, and I thought he did a reasonably good job. I mean, there was a couple of times where he was caught out against Westhoff, but on the whole, I thought he did a pretty good job considering the height difference, etc. And obviously there was, and he was in pretty solid form last year, and obviously was certainly missed in that grand final where he could have played on someone like Gunston. But I think he's certainly done more than enough on his list. And as you said, 12 games, hopefully he'll have a bit better run next year. Number six, another player probably a bit like Zach Dawson, causes quite a bit of debate about his good and bad with Daniel Pearce. And obviously when he plays forward at 50, he can certainly be a damaging player, but is prone to the odd brain fade, and then obviously gets himself tangled up a bit too often sometimes, Seppo, just trying to get back on his left, and he certainly probably could work on using a bit of a right foot in the off-season.
Yeah, certainly, and I think if you think about Daniel Pearce's best play was almost early on in the season, in round one, I think the complement of him and Hill were making us look really good, and his long kicking and the way he was moving the ball very quickly and running a bit and sending it upfield, becoming like a 60-metre player almost. It's just a shame that his couple of brain fades and that ability not to be able to use his other foot or just take a bit too long to even just get it onto his foot. And obviously a bit of fumbling. I think Ross mentioned that in the post-match presser as well, that we're just a bit fumbly at times. And when you think about a fumbly player, he's one that sticks out and, in my mind, on the list as one that probably just needs to clean up his hands a bit more with that first touch and get a bit quicker with the reflexes.
Yeah, and, in fairness to him, he did lead the league inside 50s. And, I mean, even that Port game, I thought he did some beautiful passes to Pav and opened it up for Walters. And, I mean, that little grubber kick he kicked in the derby, Seppo, towards that last quarter when West Coast were coming, was also pretty good as well. So, I think it's just a matter of being a little bit more consistent and getting those brain fades out of his game. I thought he showed a little bit more with his tackling this year. At times I thought he was certainly stronger at the balls, particularly early in the contested ball in the season. I thought he was quite good. But as I said, if you can just get that little bit more consistency, I think he can certainly add something, because he's certainly a player we need out there, because his speed does help us, particularly with Hill. And hopefully, as I said earlier, maybe Sheridan can take that next step as well next year. Obviously, next player doesn't need any introduction, Seppo, and the AFL MVP, and obviously also in for his first All-Australian gig, and it's just going to be, it's worth probably paying this, $400 to $600 bucks a year membership just to go and watch him play 11 times a year. So, terrific year by Fife, and just probably spoiled by a couple of suspensions, certainly one that wasn't warranted, and certainly after the debacle of the match review panel this week and tribunal, it's certainly one that Fremantle definitely should have challenged earlier in the year.
Yeah, it's a real shame that the his season is just going to be remembered for that contentious bump issue. And it's it's amazing what could have been. If that hadn't have happened, would have the suspension at the back end of the year happened, would have been 2 weeks. And, well, could this have been an opportunity for him to win the Brownlow this year with, you know, Ablett going down for a long period of time? It's just a big what-if situation, but at least he's been recognised by his peers with that MVP, and I reckon he's a chance, even though he's missed those couple of games, to go close to winning a second Doig medal. There wouldn't be too many others that have had a nice, consistent and sort of great game in the way he's performed this year, although missing those couple of games is, it's a real shame that he could have just had an absolute fantastic year and one that we'll all remember for years.
Absolutely. No, I think, as you said, he certainly deserves his All-Australian gig and, as you said, fantastic recognition to be voted by your peers in that regard as well. So, terrific season for him. And as I said, I'm just thankful that he's locked away for 3 more years, Seppo, so we get to enjoy him for at least those next 3 years without any problems. Obviously, number 8, Nick Subin, played 21 games for the year and, you know, certainly showed bits and pieces throughout the year and, you know, his best is very good, but probably just needs to get a bit of a difference between his best and his worst out there. You know, sometimes, as I said, he's certainly, his goal kicking is certainly better, you know, it's quite often more on the run than set shots, so I think that's something he could work on. But he certainly gives us something that we don't have, and he's quite good in the clearances. Probably just needs to work on getting, I think he had 17 frees against this year and probably 16 were holding the balls. Mm. So he just needs to work on that a little bit as well, I think.
I think that's one thing I can think of with Subin. He's a great kick. He's nice and hard at the contest. But for me, I think it's for him is just learning to either release the ball a bit quicker or try not to just push through the contest like Fife and Barlow can do and get a ball away. He seems to think he's a superhuman strength and just break through tackles where sometimes it comes off, but sometimes he's just a bit too slow. I don't know if it's a breakaway speed or he's just underestimating how fast he can actually move. But, yeah, he certainly needs to work on a quicker disposal and even just breaking away quickly or just spotting up a target and getting it on the boot quicker because he's certainly got an asset there. And, yeah, he's a lot of people talked about him, you know, potentially being trade bait or something like that. But the fact that we signed him up to, you know, 2017 along with other couple of players mean that I think he's going to be there at our club for a while. He's one that sort of bleeds purple and goes in pretty hard. So hopefully he's around for a while and can just add a bit to his game.
Yeah, absolutely. And you certainly can't fault his effort or anything like that. And the problem is as well, half the time, Seppo, when he gets caught, he looks as guilty as sin when he's trying to get the ball out. Yeah. You know, other players sort of do it. And he's sort of like, he's looking at the umpire trying to say, I'm moving it. And every time they look at him and go, no, you're not. And they sort of ping him. But if he can work on that sort of thing, and as I said, just maybe, I mean, he kicked 11 goals for the year, but if you can maybe get that up to 15 to 20, I think it will certainly add another bow to his game as well. The last one we're going to look at this week, Seppo, is Matt De Boer. Sort of been in and out of the side, probably had a bit of a wretched run with injury, with his knee injury, and sort of never really been able to establish himself back in the side after that, with Crozier coming in playing that sort of defensive forward role and probably doing it with pretty good aplomb, which we'll look at a bit more later. But I think he's certainly a very handy squad player, but I just don't think his disposal probably would allow him to be in the best 22 every week.
Mm, certainly one that looks like he's gone a bit backwards in his development from last year, and that could be, once again, due to injuries and not just having a clean run at it, but it's one that we all sort of thought at the start of the year that if Sylvia was going to come in or Crozier, that he'd be the type of player that would be making way from the best 22, and it's sort of evidently gone that way, and it's just a hard run for him to get back after his injuries this year.
Yeah, by all accounts, West Coast apparently are getting into him quite a bit, so it'd be interesting to see if he does accept the one-year offer from Fremantle or whether he does, whether Fremantle do look to trade him out or whether he looks to get a trade across to either West Coast or another side. I think he's, as I said, I mean, if he's in your squad, I think you definitely have, I mean, he does everything well, he's a great team man, trains hard, but, and he's, you know, I think his kicking certainly improved from when he was first drafted, but, you know, in this day and age, you just got to be able to hit your targets a little bit better. And I think even on the weekend, Seppo, you know, when he came on as the sub, I think he had a shot from about 40 to 45 metres out in the last quarter there, which would have given us a small sniff, I think, at that stage, even though it was probably unlikely, but wasn't even able to make the distance. And, you know, you just got to be able to, you know, I know Main's not a great kick either, but it brings other things to the table. And you just got to do that a little bit better, I think, for him. So it'll certainly be a big year for him next year, even if he does accept the one-year deal.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's it for the first nine players, and we'll, as I said, have another look next week at a little bit more in depth at the rest of the list, obviously without a game to review. Any other points you want to bring up, Seppo, for the Big Footy listeners?
No, that's it. We'll listen over the next couple of weeks as we go through trade week, the free agency period and the draft period, and we'll come through with the rest of the analysis of the list. So stay in tune with the board. Have a look out for all the drafting competitions we've got going, and keep yourself familiar with what's going on the off-season. There's a calendar thread for all the goings-on to keep up date with the draft, and we'll look to seeing you around.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it'll be a case of handing over to our training gurus like Salim Malik and Harry Reams and those boys, Gaskin and those and the Sheriff and whatnot, Seppo, because it'll be probably a pretty long off-season, I think, with the Cricket World Cup coming up. So hopefully those boys will be able to get down there and give us those updates as well.
No worries.
All right, that's it for this week, guys. Thanks for joining us, and we will see you again next week. Bye for now.